Thanks for inviting me into your home, your parents' basement, loft, RV, camper, long-haul truck, taxi, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett, filling in for George Norrie, and tonight, this morning, we're coming to you live from Coast's Toronto affiliate, Talk Radio AM 640. Outside the studio and overhead, a full moon. And at nightfall tonight, some of you may have caught a glimpse of the Earth's shadow darken the moon during what is called a penumbral lunar eclipse. It's also a harvest moon because it's the full moon closest to the autumnal equinox. And it's the second year in a row the harvest moon has been eclipsed. Last year, we witnessed an amazing event, the harvest moon and a total lunar eclipse known as the blood moon. Remember that? Now, tonight's lunar eclipse is a little less dramatic and a little more difficult to spot. Someone called Mystic Mama writes online that this full moon is in Pisces, and that should bring forth a surge of emotional energy. The watery depths of our unconscious bubble their way to the surface. At this apex of emotional uprising, we must feel to heal, and like true spiritual warriors, brave our hearts through our wounds that are the doorway. Eclipses on the Virgo-Pisces axis, Mystic Mama continues, are a precious event full of imagination, intuition, and participation in the unified field of the One. I don't know about that, but it's Friday, and that means open lines, and you throw a full moon into the mix, and that means things are going to get very, very interesting in the last 2 hours of the program. Coming up in hours one and two, autonomous weapons systems. Think Terminator, robots, artificial intelligence on the battlefield, on the ground, in the air, on the water, and under the sea. But are such systems ethical? How likely and soon is the government set to deploy them? Could autonomous weapons turn out to be a disastrous mistake? Among the lauded new technologies is swarms, weapons moving in large formations with one controller somewhere far away on the ground clicking computer keys. Think hundreds of small drones moving as one, like a lethal flock of birds that would put Hitchcock's birds to shame. Or how about an armada of autonomous ships? The weapons communicate with each other to accomplish the mission in what is called collaborative autonomy. And this is already happening. 2 years ago, a small fleet of autonomous ships sailed down the James River. In July, the Office of Naval Research tested 30 drones flying together off a small ship at sea that were able to break out of formation, perform a mission, and then regroup. Not to be left behind, the UK is developing the Taranis, a supersonic stealth drone like the X-47B, except land-based. China, through a black box of military development, has tested the Sharp Sword, their own stealth combat drone attempting to reach supersonic speeds. And there's word of an air-to-air fighter, the Dark Sword, or Anjian, but it is not known for how far along in development these are. The Chinese have also showcased pixelated camouflage for tanks, which look like they've come straight out of Minecraft. Russia has the Armada T-14 tank with an unmanned remote-controlled turret that spins 360 degrees. It currently requires three crew members, but the company has said they're planning to go to zero in the next few years. They also want to build a fully roboticized unit with artificial intelligence as soon as possible. Israel is already moving in that direction. They've developed the Guardium to patrol borders. Instant robotics and AI expert Eric Schiffer is a leading authority on technology, robotics, and cybersecurity. He'll be along shortly to discuss how close we are to a Terminator future scenario. So come on in, hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. Tonight, this morning, it's you and me and your radio under a glorious harvest moon. And these lyrics by Jimmy Webb come immediately to mind. See her as she flies, golden sails across the sky, close enough to touch, but be careful if you try. Though she looks as warm as gold, The moon's a harsh mistress. The moon can be so cold. I'm Richard Serrett. This is Coast to Coast AM. Why don't you stay a while? Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. A Renaissance man in the truest sense of the word. Eric Schiffer is a best-selling author and a successful entrepreneur. He's founded two companies listed on Inc. magazine's 500 fastest-growing companies and serves as a trusted advisor to multiple Fortune 500 CEOs, presidents of countries, foreign leaders, and Forbes 400 billionaires. Currently, Eric is chairman and CEO of Patriarch Private Equity, sits on the board of directors of socialmediamarketing.com, and serves as a member of the advisory board to SEOP.com and Reputation Management Consultants. Eric, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
Welcome. Good, Richard. It's been a while.
It has, indeed. Great to have you back.
Thank you.
Explain what fully autonomous weapons means, because that's going to be a new term for some people.
Well, it is. It is. And really what it means is that the system has the ability to not only execute weaponry, but to do it by itself. So we have drones today. We certainly have now cars that can drive themselves. We also have very sophisticated algorithms that allow us to win against humans at chess and games like Go. And I want you to imagine that you were to put all of those together, and you also then add weapons to them. And so you're talking about a system that can think on its own, that has the ability to execute lethally, and it is the future. It's already underway in various countries, and it's something that requires a lot more discussion because of the implications to humanity and certainly to national defense.
Right out of the chute, Noam, already I'm seeing lots and lots of flags. Now, fully autonomous weapons, then, as distinct from remote-controlled weapon systems, and we already have those, we've seen those, drones, for example. So there isn't a live human being on a keyboard clicking away miles from the battlefield still in control here. These are, as you say, they're fully autonomous, no human intervention?
That's right. I mean, the military right now has a host of robotic systems in the battlefield, I mean, from reconnaissance to attack drones to bomb disposal robots. But these are all remote piloted systems. So you have a situation where the human is on the loop, in essence, so they can arrest control. And what we're talking about is a system that, in theory, could still be on the loop, meaning a human could take back control. But these are, in many cases, designed to kill without any human intervention.
So they are using, they're making decisions, these autonomous weapons, are making decisions based on what, some arithmetic calculation?
Yeah, these are all algorithm-driven situations. So, but the concern is what would happen if you have an ever-increasing level of artificial intelligence that has a system that allows itself to continue to expand its knowledge, that taps into larger databases, and then can begin to have, in time, a consciousness. And you marry that with the autonomous weaponry and the technology, and you have a prescription for a huge challenge. And it's caused many in the scientific community, in artificial intelligence, in robotics, to want to intervene on a moral level to try to restrict the future evolution and creation of these devices, which then calls into question many different concerns about how far that should occur and then what is the implication to national defense.
Tell me more about these. This fully autonomous weapon called swarms.
Well, one of the weapons allows for people to, and for items that are autonomous to collectively act in a system. So you're talking about multiple different forms of small robotic devices that can communicate, that can act in a group system and that can individually operate autonomously, but do better in a group. So you could liken it to a pack of wolves. You could liken it to any type of a team situation. And the future that is being theorized, certainly by the Army and in their studies of future robotic warfare and artificial intelligence-driven warfare, includes these situations where you have teams of robots that are driven together to defeat the enemy, either human or robotic. And that's the concern, is that at some point, when you begin to move down this path, you really then put yourself in a situation where there will be few humans on the battlefield. It's great from one perspective because of prevention of loss of life, but there's another side of it, which is that at some point you can completely lose control of the system.
In war, I mean, there are rules, and a human intelligence, human judgment, they make humans subject and accountable to rules and the norms of war. So if wars are being fought at some point by robots using artificial intelligence, does that mean the rules of war have changed?
I don't think that it necessarily means that the rules of war have changed. I think it depends on how these robots would be programmed. And certainly, I think in countries that subscribe to a Geneva Convention, that subscribe to certain restrictions on how war is undergone, then you wouldn't have issues. But the concern then leads to, well, what happens if a group like an Al-Qaeda or an ISIS were to grab control of these weapons and where to program them, and then what are the implications to the warfare in the future when there is no morality that's programmed into them? And then what should we do from a defense standpoint on the United States side or on the United Nations side to ensure that humanity and the good of humanity is able to prevail?
But how do you program morality or the Geneva Convention into an algebraic equation?
Well, it can be a really perplexing set of questions. And I think what we have seen over the last several years, and there's been some really great minds that have participated in some of these discussions, which is that there needs to be some baseline, I think, collective agreement on what is reasonable and what is not reasonable for the expansion of artificial intelligence and the expansion of robotics as it relates to war. And all of that is fine, and you can get the greatest minds to agree, and certainly those that are running democratic societies and even non-democratic societies, but who adhere to some rule of international law. But what do you do when terrorists who don't decide to either steal or build these devices? I mean, many of these elements now are not difficult to put together. It's not like uranium where there may be challenges in building a nuclear weapon. The components to build a autonomous lethal device that is able to kill, able to use artificial intelligence, is not restrictive by any type of specific resource. So that then, to me, in many ways, moots some of these arguments. And so it brings up a host of questions. And many in the military, certainly in the United States, feel that we shouldn't restrict for the purposes of defense alone. While we may not want to build and invest in an offensive structure, at minimum, we should be prepared for groups that are investing significantly in this. And look, China, Russia, even South Korea have limited laws, if any, restrictions on the development of these types of future killing machines.
Instant robotics and AI expert Eric Schiffer is with us, and we are discussing a potential Terminator, a future scenario. My father was a tank gunner in the Second World War, and a Sherman tank helped liberate Holland. And now we've 70 years later, we're looking at, for example, this a Russian tank that the Armada T-14 with an unmanned remote control turret that spins 360 degrees. Now, at present, it requires three crew members, but the company that makes it says they're planning to go to zero in the next few years. I'm trying to imagine a battlefield where you have an these Armada T-14 tanks on the Russian side facing off against whoever their combatant might be. What is the point of all that? I mean, if you've got unmanned tanks facing off against unmanned tanks, no human casualties, how do you tell who wins?
Well, I think it's the last robot standing. I mean, really, in essence, the thing is that these devices would be able to decimate even the best human fighters. So this will be the extreme alpha archetype of humanity in the future, and that's not to say that there won't be a period in which you will have technology-enabled abilities to enhance human capacity. So if you look at the movie Iron Man, for instance, it's a good working example of likely what we're going to see over the next 10, 15, 20 years until we make this next big jump. And the Marines are investing in it. You have other fighting forces around the world that are investing in ways in which you can make the exoskeleton allow for humans to carry more, to actually have other devices to walk alongside you, to be able to carry payload and do things that even that a Marine would consider to be boring and not useful in terms of their time, where they and also dangerous. So, for instance, to be able to partake in doing mining on what might be a field that could include chemical weapons, etc. But I think a time traveler from today, if you go out into the mid-century ahead, would be, I think, taken with what will be a pretty overcrowding of the battlefield with all kinds of robots, robots that will absolutely supersede human fighters and look like humans. And again, the great thing is the lack of loss of life. The challenging component is that at some point we can completely lose control.
Can a fully autonomous weapon differentiate between combatants on the one side and non-combatants or defenseless civilians on the other?
Well, they're going to be trained to. So, in fact, the Navy is working on devices now that can go in and literally take out targets and know what the difference will be between an enemy target and a friendly ship or a friendly target. And so they will absolutely be able to discern what is friendly, what is not, what may be a threat. But that raises a lot of other concerns, which is, look, when you begin to map this technologic advance structure with this timeless book, The Art of War, which has been the seminal book for certainly our fighting forces over the last couple hundred years, and arguably the winning battlefield commanders over the last several, 2,000 years, I think that you can certainly see opportunities where you could pose robots, and robots will create their own robots that will look like the enemy to fool them. There will be situations in which cyber hacking will occur, and you one fighting force could arrest the algorithm and maybe even intercede in what we call being on the loop, where humans could intervene. So it can get incredibly complex, and these things need to be gamed out, and certainly they will be, but we will reach a point where all of this becomes far greater in terms of the collective intelligence than our smartest collective minds.
And yeah, that's what scares me. You are painting for what for me is a very bleak picture. Eric, stay put. We'll come back and continue to discuss a possible Terminator scenario. Here is Betty Wright to make us feel a little bit better with Shara Shara, taking us into the break here on Coast to Coast AM. Sitting in for George Nori. And we are speaking with Eric Schiffer, artificial intelligence instant robotics expert, about a potential Terminator scenario. Fully autonomous weapons. And keeping in mind that most of today's armed conflicts are what they call interstate conflicts. In other words, you don't have clear boundaries between a variety of armed groups and civilians. Look at the situation in Syria on the ground. So to me, it is very questionable, dubious, how a robot could possibly be effectively programmed to avoid civilian casualties. Humans don't seem to have the ability to make distinctions in such conflict settings. And constant, you know, the fog of war and so forth. There are constant difficulties overcoming these dilemmas. And then the other question is, how do you hold an autonomous weapon system accountable for their actions in an armed conflict? What do you do? Do you haul the computer programmer before a war tribunal? We'll get into all of that and more when Eric Schiffer joins us again in mere moments. Just a reminder, if you know someone who's not a night owl like us, and they can't stay up and they can't listen to Coast, let them know about Coast's Insiders Club. They can have Coast delivered right to their desktop or mobile device, and they can listen to it during the day. It costs about 15 cents every day, and you can send them to coasttocoastam.com to sign up. It's simple. And then they won't have to keep asking you, what was on the show last night? Coast Insiders Club. Tell a friend. All right, back to more of my conversation with Eric Schiffer on fully autonomous weapons in mere moments. Welcome back to Coast, Richard Serrett filling in for George Nori. Eric Schiffer stays with us as we discuss fully autonomous weapons, robots on the battlefield. You mentioned earlier, Eric, that one day we will see soldiers who look human, but they are essentially robots. How far are we away from that situation?
It really depends on the perspective of how you define these. So I believe that we may be as early as 10 years. In certain circles, it's already there. So for instance, you know, when you look at how we might try to ban these lawful, autonomous weapons, we have a challenge because even the U.S., I mean, we have the Patriot Air Defense System, which shoots down incoming missiles, which is somewhat automatic. I mean, certainly the humans are on the loop. It can interrupt. The Navy's own the Aegis system, its own anti-missile system on the high seas is similar. There's South Korea. They have the SGR-A1, I believe, which is an autonomous stationary robot that's set up along the border of the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea that can kill those people that are attempting to flee. And we're talking about a box that's armed with a 5.56 millimeter machine gun, a 40 millimeter grenade launcher, and the robot sends the signal back to the operator to fire. So there's a person behind every decision to use force, but there are many reports that even this robot in South Korea has an automatic mode, which is on at any given time. We don't know, okay? And Israel, for instance, has the Harpy, which is a second-generation Harop, which enters an area and it can look for enemy radar, and it basically kamikazes it, regardless of where they're set up. This is fully autonomous. it's got a human on the loop mode, so the human can intervene. And we, what they call this is precursor weapons, but the distinction is really somewhat hazy, and I think it's done with the intent to be. And many countries, like the U.S., they don't even risk mentioning certain types of technologies. So the elements and many of the functions of fully autonomous are in existence now. So it's just a question now of maturation, sophistication, and how you ultimately define what would be this end game. And when I talk about, I think, the full maturation, you're looking at the mid-century. Russia is aggressive in this area. They've been investing. They see a future where most warfare will be done fully in this regard, land, sea, and air. And I think that the United States is well aware of this and has been making their own investments. But the biggest advances have really not come necessarily from DARPA, which has been, which is the arm of the United States, where a lot of the innovation has normally come. Today, it's coming from the private sector. So you have tremendous investments that are happening in artificial intelligence, certainly within Silicon Valley, many of which is being used for commercial purposes and civilian purposes. But there are some offshoots that are being used for military devices and military planning and action related items. And then
What about local police forces? I mean, is it coming to our town?
Well, we saw it in Dallas. So we saw the bomb that went off by the robot in Dallas that was detonated, and this was a robotic device that went into this area where the shooter, who had killed many innocent people, was hiding out, and they detonated the bomb. And
sure, those have been with us for a few years, but yes. What about a scenario where you get pulled over and you don't know, is it real or is it Memorex? Is that an actual human being asking for my driver's and registration, or is that a robot?
Yeah, that will be far in the future. I think you're going to see those elements probably be the last, certainly in the United States, to happen. In Russia and in other countries, I think that you'll see them a lot sooner.
Well, call me paranoid, Eric, but I have this theory, and it's not just mine. A lot of people share this theory, that by the time we learn about some technological advancement, it's probably been around for a lot longer than we think. And when by the time it's ready for public consumption, whoever is behind it is already another 50 years ahead.
Yeah. Well, look, we saw this with the NSA and Snowden. So the American public and certainly those around the world were, I think, very surprised to understand the level of surveillance that the United States was conducting through the NSA, through many different programs. And many of these concerns exist as it relates to artificial intelligence and robotics and what may be already underway and what may be being utilized. And we really won't know that to its final conclusion until much later. But what we can say, and I think what I think is reasonable to understand, is that we still are in the early innings of what will be a far greater, far more sophisticated scenario than even the Terminator movies have put forth.
And you seemed confident that these fully autonomous weapons are going to be able to conduct sort of a risk assessment. For example, sometimes military attacks aren't carried out because of the risk of causing a disproportionately high civilian damage. There are those who doubt that a robotic system is capable of making that decision. And you're confident that the robots can make that decision?
Well, I think that the artificial intelligence will exist for very sophisticated computations that will supersede the collective brain power of some of our smartest minds and programmed with best practices and principles that we know are timeless elements of effective war strategy for victory. And part of those strategies, especially art of war, is to not fight if at all necessary. So one of the best ways of winning a war is to never have to fight it through the right planning and the right strategy. And I think that to the extent that we go down this path, there's certainly arguments that humanity and the smarter elements of our and the leadership that exists in society will fight hard in a democracy to ensure that there is some level of conscience that's built into the artificial intelligence, some level of programmable morality. And then I think simultaneous to that, on the defense side, the gloves will come off with some controls for defensive purposes.
But there are but a handful, relatively, a handful of democracies. What about the rest of the world and their fully autonomous weapon systems?
My biggest concern is an ISIS that still is extremely well financed, that can either steal or purchase and then create devices that would be driven algorithmically in time and ultimately be used for nefarious purposes against targets, soft targets, and potentially even more vulnerable areas and areas that we would consider to not be necessarily soft targets, but that could be devastating to national security.
Or simply some despotic regime using these systems against their own people as a tool of repression.
No question. As well as assassination, targeted killings, et cetera, because the ability to do this at a capital efficiency level that makes it exceptionally interesting to someone that would be of that mindset.
And who, in the case of a war crime, when the combatants are robots, who gets dragged to The Hague, or a war tribunal? Is it the programmer?
You pose an interesting set of questions, because I think in these scenarios, the programming is never necessarily done in a silo. I mean, these are done in groups. You, in many cases, are using existing code and license code, and then. But ultimately, I think that the responsibility would likely fall on the decider, meaning the leader who makes the decision to employ these. I think it's ultimately the person that puts them into the theater of engagement that I think would own the responsibility. And I think there's an argument for those that would have knowingly participated in the creation of a device that could be used to damage humanity. But I think many of these, though, would not necessarily start out that way. I mean, you've got the ability to hack systems that can then be reprogrammed. So, you can have devices that could be controlled on the loop, meaning it could be intervened, it could be autonomous, but then there would be a human override, and then that could just be eliminated. And they could be reprogrammed without any type of consciousness or morality. And that would be the worst case situation. And that's where we need to be protective and, I think, very careful, because that's where the biggest threats exist.
What is this going to do to defense budgets going forward? No longer a need for huge standing armies and all the resources that go into feeding an army and so forth. What will it do to defense budgets?
Well, it's an interesting argument too, because there are some that say that if you do have these robotic systems, that they can also replicate at a pretty capital efficient level. So you could have systems that are building new systems, and again, without the cost of humans, without the salaries, without the time that it would typically take, because they don't have to rest, they don't have to sleep, and so it really becomes a material issue and that of programming. And when you have artificial intelligence that continues to expand its capability logarithmically, you have a situation where, again, software programmers become obsolete too. These are the things that must be thought through, and they're coming.
Fully autonomous ships. I'm trying to imagine, let's say, a huge destroyer with no crew, virtually no crew?
Correct. Yeah, I think that there still will be some human involvement, certainly in the early part of this century. But I think as we move toward the middle of the century and towards the end, my assessment and my belief is that you will see very limited human involvement in the theater of engagement, in the actual war zone. This will all be done through algorithms. It will all be done in real time. The decision-making, the wartime decision-making that will occur, the battlefield decision-making that will occur, will eliminate almost all latency, because every possible scenario as to what would be the likelihood of prevailing will have already been executed and run and simulated at rapid speed by these devices. So they'll know the right decisions to make.
No body bags coming home, as we touched on this earlier. No human casualties. That's going to make it easier. It's going to make it easier for governments to sign off on going to war, isn't it?
Yeah, I think what it does is it lowers the barrier, and that's another concern behind this entire movement of wanting to stop the autonomous weaponry and the artificial intelligence arena as it relates to warfare. But the cat is out of the bag. I mean, these devices and these systems are already well underway. And there's an argument that doing and trying to prevent it is a Luddite, argument that just won't hold up. And I think it's going to be difficult to back away from the movements we've already done. And again, if everyone is altruistic, we have no issues. But we know, society has taught us that there are madmen, there are groups for religious purposes that will see the world differently, and they will want to take action and move to violent means, and they will look for the latest set of weaponry, as we've seen over the centuries, to prevail and to have their dogma be the leading dogma.
Eric Schiffer is with us. We're talking about fully autonomous weapons, robots on the battlefield. Coming up on a break, let me throw this out now, and we can start to address it and then pick it up on the other side. And that is, you will have nations and have not nations, those with the technology and those with not. And my concern would be, as we sort of approach that zero point, those countries that do not have will realize that they are very quickly going to lose any sort of military advantage. And before the fully autonomous weapons are fully engaged, they may just decide to launch everything they have, nukes or whatever weapons they have, in order to prevent sort of being outgunned by those that have the fully autonomous weapons.
It's an interesting theory. I think that I think we actually will find a pretty symmetrical situation to what we have today, where we have the United States that is still the dominant military force in the world, who has formed alliances with countries that currently don't make large investments in their military as it relates to a percentage of GDP, and therefore will in some form rely upon the United States for protection and support, and or a NATO type of situation. And I think so these states that, again, technologically will not be enabled through artificial intelligence and through autonomous weaponry will find their own protection through some type of collective defense.
Eric, I hope you're right on that score at least. All right, we'll come back and discuss further. Here's Ray Charles taking us into the break with "The Nighttime is the Right Time." You got that right, Ray. Back with more Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us.